She actually ended up mooning us one day, which was funny. To get mooned by Cloris Leachman.
That put that one down on the bucket list, man.
Yeah. Welcome to Because Nerd. I'm your host, Chris Farrell, and I'm joined once again by two of my best and oldest friends, Clint.
Hey, hey.
And Mike.
Hey, now.
And on top of that, we are joined by another special guest today, Eddie McClintock, well known for his leading role in Warehouse 13 and otherwise side character lead extraordinaire.
Hello.
Pleasure to have you with us, Eddie.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks, guys. Right on.
I want to bring something up right away. You know, doing some research to talk to you, Eddie. You and I met at a con here in Phoenix, and I was with Chris, and we had kind of come up to you, and you had spoken to Chris before. So, I mean, obviously, I know who you are. I've seen the show. But in doing some research, I noticed that you did the artwork for V is for Vagina for the Pussifer album.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Say what?
I just had to get up front. Yeah, like we're musicians, all three, Chris and I and Mike.
Oh, cool.
We are all, Mike and I are in a band, and Chris and I were in a band, you know, a long time ago, and we all still play music quite a bit. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh man, I got to ask him about that.
I was an art major in college until I decided that poon and liquor was more important.
Yeah. As you do.
Yeah.
And got a check for the wife. So I kind of put my artwork, on the back burner. And then when Warehouse 13 started, my wife was like, you know, you should get your artwork back out there. So I started working on my art again. And I had been friends with Maynard for 20 years or whatever. And, you know, he was like, you know, would you be interested in doing the album artwork with me? And I had always wanted to, you know, I mean, I had always been a big Tool fan and, and I've always had a great respect for Maynard's ability to create all manners of art. So it was a big honor to be asked. And so of course, looking back on it, I'm like, I should have done this and changed this. But yeah, we if you've seen the inside sleeve has all the different just weird things that he and I came up with. Like I would come up with something weird and then I'd send it to him and then he'd make it more weird. And then,
yeah,
so that's how we kind of did that.
Nice.
In the pocket itself, if you look down in the pocket, there's a little hidden message that we put in there. Because I told him, I was like, certainly they're going to be looking for, you know, hidden messages from you.
Right,
so let's give them one.
Man, that is super cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's really cool. You're talking to longtime huge Tool fans. We're right. Long time. I mean, anything Perfect Circle, Tool, Maynard, period. That guy is a genius. And I think, like you said, in all forms of art, I mean, he's an amazing dude. I wish it would... Wish it wouldn't be, 13 years between albums for Tool. But I mean, hey, I'll take it when I can get it.
Yeah.
Hey, he's busy making some very, very good wine. Shit, it's awesome.
Yeah. I drank enough for just about everybody on the planet. And then I thought my days were numbered. But yeah. And his new on-stage persona that he has going now with the spiky wig and the clown. It's so cool. I saw some fan art that the guy did, like a cartoon of his new persona. And it's really cool, man.
Yeah. That's awesome, really, man. Cool. Yeah. That is awesome.
That's so cool.
So how did you guys get acquainted? I'm curious, like,
let's see. I was friends with Moon Zappa, and we're still friends, I guess. I haven't seen her for a long time. She's got a family and does her thing, but she would say, hey, come meet me. And so I'd meet her at the theater in the lobby, and then this guy came walking up, and I'm like, that's Maynard. from Tool.
Yeah.
Right.
And the three of us would go into the theater and watch the movie and then come out and then kind of all go, okay, bye. And he'd go his way and I'd go my way. And we did that a couple times. And then we showed up early one time. So we actually had to communicate and we went over and sat down and had some food. And, you know, it turned out he wrestled in high school. His dad was a wrestling coach. He was from Ohio. I'm from Ohio. And I wrestled in college. So we just kind of, you know, started talking about working out. And so he was like, yeah, man, I have a gym at my house. You should come over. We start working out. So I started going out to his house in the Valley. It was right when Billy Howardell had moved in. And so, you know, like I was, hey, this is Billy. Hey, Billy. And then interestingly, we went to the Tool rehearsal space one night. They were recording Anima.
Oh, my God.
And Billy was out working on his computer and he was like, I'm working on this music and Maynard's gonna sing. And they didn't have a name for the band or anything at the time. And Billy ended up burning me a disc of the music, the entire Mare de Gnomes on disc with no vocal tracks. Watching how that music all developed and came about, it was some of the best time. I mean, because I, before acting or anything else, I was always the guy who wanted to be Trent Reznor when I was growing up. Like, I just like loved music and wished I was a musician. And so to be able to be that close to music that I loved that much was really awesome. Yeah. And when APC did their first tour ever, they went up the California coast. Maynard was still reading the lyrics off a piece of paper on stage. Mm-hmm. We went up the coast in Tim's van. Tim Alexander, who played the drums for Primus.
Yeah, Tim.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the van broke down and, you know, we were staying in crummy little hotels and, you know, I was like, wow, man, you know.
How cool is that?
I'm stranded with you guys.
And some bands that I absolutely love. I've been a Primus fan since the beginning.
Yep.
Love them.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Billy was a guitar tech for Fishbone. Billy Corgan and David Bowie and then Trent Reznor.
Wow.
That's a great resume.
Wow. That's awesome. Also love Fishbone. Fishbone underrated. Should be bigger than they ever were.
Yeah.
Fantastic band.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and for anybody listening to the podcast that may not be familiar with Tool or Maynard or Trent Reznor, what he's describing is basically like, if I could equate it to a holy grail of recording studio time or like being with a musician in the world of Maynard and Tool and all of this music he's talking about, to be able to be in the room when Maynard and those guys are recording an album, that doesn't happen. I mean, you never hear of that happening. And maybe because, you know, I'm not in part of that world, maybe it happens more than I know. But to all of us fans, that's like, you know, no one gets to have that high of an honor. So that's so cool, man.
Eddie's like, hold on, I got nine more fingers to count off, dude. I got a whole bunch of shit to tell. This happens every day, man.
Yeah, well, I remember when Maynard had his loft, their rehearsal space was behind the loft, where everybody had their instruments. And one day Maynard was like, come on, we're going to play the new album from front to back. And my buddy Steve and I just sat on the floor next to one of Danny's kick drums. And they played the entire album from front to back just for the two of us.
Man. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Holy shit, man.
Yeah, it was pretty badass.
That's a dream, dude. That's awesome.
And then they were getting ready to do their European tour. And I just said to Maynard, I was like, can I come with you guys? And Maynard's like, you know, sure. So I flew over to the UK and then we flew from the UK to Sweden. And then from Sweden, we took a boat to Finland. And then we went to Poland, Austria, Germany, Holland, and Denmark.
Oh my God. That is an epic following of a band on a tour. That's incredible.
Yeah, I always throw it out there. I'm like, yeah, you know, when I was on tour with Tool and Maynard likes to bag on me about it. Yeah, we, you know, it was insane. I went bungee jumping with Danny during one of the shows. I got yelled at by the tour manager because he was like, you can't take the drummer, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Bungee jumping. And I'm like, Danny's 6'4", 230. You know, he's his own man. You know, I had nothing to do with it.
Right. So I didn't coax him into doing anything he didn't want to do, man.
Yeah.
So this, the time frame, and I apologize, I should know this, but I didn't go back and look at the years of Warehouse 13, but was this pre or post Warehouse 13 when you were out there with those guys?
Pre.
It was pre-Warehouse. Okay.
So how do you go from artwork and college art and you're hanging with Tool to acting?
I mean, honestly, I basically got fired from every other job I'd had. I you know, I was
fail until you make it. That's what they always say.
My uncle offered me a job at his insurance company when I was still in college. And my uncle only knew me as, like, I'd come out to visit. He lived in LA, obviously, and he only knew me from my visits, you know, so I'd clean up and get my shit together and act like a normal human. And then as soon as I was out of his sight, I would become an animal again. And he was like, you know, come out and sell insurance. And I told all my wrestling friends and all my friends back in Ohio, I was like, hey, I'm going to be an insurance guy in LA. And they all laughed. And sure enough, I mean, I was insane. You know, I was just like, I was a mess. So I basically, and my uncle fired me, and then I
my uncle fired you, man. That sucks.
He fired me after 7 months, and then I was a PA for a while, and I was terrible at that. I mean, I tried really hard, but you know, I was drinking and doing a lot of drugs and stuff. And so eventually I started taking acting class. Actually, Moon was the one who got me into acting class. So I started taking acting class, and then I liked it, and I thought I had some ability, and I decided to get sober and try and change my life. And so I'll be 19 January 1st, if everything goes well.
Congratulations, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. That's great, man.
Very cool.
Thanks. So I got sober, and I felt like this was kind of my last chance. You know, I was like, I'm either going to have a life or I'm going to continue to destroy everything around me. And so I had a few relapses on and off, which is why I'll only have 19 years. But basically, that's it. I mean, I if I hadn't gotten sober, you know, none of this would have happened. So
I had a similar path from my youth. I had, by the time I was 27, I started kicking a lot of drug habits and things at that time and turned my life around, mainly due to my wife. So can relate to that part of it.
Good for you.
And I just always interested in somebody that gets into acting because it's such a difficult thing to get into. I have a really good longtime friend, Tyrone, if you're listening, always proud of you, buddy. He was on the Inhumans Marvel TV show, but he's kind of out there still doing his thing and, you know, getting roles here and there and stuff. So it's always rooting for him, but it's a hard business, right? I mean, it's hard to...
Yeah. I mean, I remember a lot of people were like, are you kidding me? People come from all over the world to LA every day to be actors who've studied, you know, gone to NYU and whatever, and done this their whole life. There's no way. And I don't know. I got lucky. You know, like you said, it's really hard. And I mean, even to this day, you know, like even after Warehouse 13 and after 22 years of working consistently, I'm an old man and I'm still like hanging on every word of every casting director of, you know, did I do a good job? Am I going to get, you know, did I get it, man? You know, it's just like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have the talent and the drive and, you know, otherwise you would have never got there, you know?
Thanks, man. Thanks.
I get what you're saying though. You still work for somebody though is the,
right.
Yeah. And I don't mind that. It's the toughest part is, I guess, not knowing, when I was on Warehouse 13, you know, you're like, are we going to get picked up? If we do get picked up, how many are they going to pick us up for? You know, do you think they're going to cancel us?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's just
yeah.
Based on that, I got a question for you on that, because you don't hear about this too much, or if you do, I haven't heard about this too much. But when you're on the set of Warehouse 13, or let's say other actors that you've met and people that are around you, are you always looking for that next gig where you're on Warehouse 13, it's going really well, you know, maybe you're going to be picked up the next season, but are you still out there auditioning, and are you still out there, you know, slinging yourself to make sure there's something next coming up, or does that all kind of fall flat while you're doing a show or while you're doing a certain gig?
There was a time, like season 3 of Warehouse 13, and I would say in the 22 years of my career, it was the only time where I felt completely safe. I knew I had a job. I knew we were okay. I knew that we weren't going to be canceled. We had become the most popular show in the history of the network at that time. So there was a lot of freedom in that. Like, I could kind of take a breath and relax. But that was really the only time. Everything else has been a scramble. And, I mean, you know, when you're on Warehouse 13, you obviously know you're not going to go and be a series regular on another show because you're obligated. When the show wasn't shooting, I was out auditioning for guest spots to do guest spots on other shows, recurring things on other shows.
Okay.
Warehouse 13 had a nice run. I mean, there's quite a few seasons, and it was a whole cool premise, right? I mean, like the supernatural thing, like I always dug X-Files. And what I liked about Warehouse 13 is that kind of using historical characters within some of the artifacts that you're getting and stuff. Like that was a cool thing.
Yeah, there was a little history, you know, lesson in almost every episode.
Yeah.
So you know, you could actually learn something if you decided to dig a little deeper into what was going on.
Yeah.
I loved when Warehouse 13 initially, when I got the audition, it was a much more serious script. And I always try and comedy, even when it's not necessarily written. I don't try and inject comedy and like, oh my God, mom is dead. And then, you know, but look, her boobs hanging out, you know.
Right.
So I don't push that hard, but I always try to find comedy in there. And David Simpkins, who was show running at the time, he told me after I got the job, he goes, you know, your initial audition was very entertaining. But I didn't think that tonally it was right for the show. So I wasn't going to move you forward. The casting director, Sean Dawson, said, you know, let's bring in Eddie just to give them an option. And, you know, they wanted it to be a companion piece to Eureka, which was kind of had a lot of comedy in it.
Yep.
And then they found out who they had hired, and they found out they had hired, you know, a complete goof. And so Jack Kenny, who ultimately became our showrunner, who I had worked with on my first show ever, which was a sitcom for Fox, we had known each other. And so he kind of just leaned into the fact that, you know, I'm just like this arrested development, you know, man, child.
Yeah, right.
And so before too long, you know, Pete was, you know, licking everything and pressing all the buttons. and just, you know, I just kind of had to show up, just be myself.
Nice. Did you have a lot, that being said, with the comedy, you know, piece of it, did you have a lot of liberty to take liberties on set and be able to say, well, I kind of ad-lib some things that you felt were funny, or were they pretty clamped down on that and they just kind of wrote it into the part?
Well, Jack, he would yell from behind the camera, as written, fucko.
All right.
So, yeah.
I never really... Not necessarily a big ad libber, although I would put buttons on scenes, meaning as long as I said all the things I was supposed to say, I would maybe put something on at the end, and if they wanted to, they could just cut it off.
Yeah. Cut it out, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like there was something about touched your boobies, and then that made it in. So every once in a while,
your comedic timing paid off.
That's right. That's right.
Nice.
6 years of college, my dad paid for.
Right.
Well, I'd just like to thank you, Eddie, for now giving Chris something to fucking yell at me every time I go off topic on the podcast.
Wow. Yeah. He's the worst. So, yeah.
I'm the one that I ramble the most, man. So it's always what's really
well, you know, writers are very protective of their words. And
yeah.
And Jack, you know, I don't mean to use this term lightly, but he's such a genius to throw it around in Hollywood. Oh, he's a genius, but I mean, the guy is so smart and such an old school Hollywood, you know, like Carol Burnett and Mel Brooks and Tim Conway. I just usually let him, you know, give me the word.
Hell yeah.
I had a question I was going to ask you there, Walk. Oh, yeah. What's your favorite Mel Brooks movie? You mentioned Mel Brooks, who's one of my all-time favorites. So what would you say your favorite movie is from that guy?
Young Frankenstein, for sure.
Hands down, right?
Yeah. And actually, it's funny. I was just texting with Jack the other day, and I had to admit that I just watched High Anxiety from front to back for really maybe the first time ever. I don't know why. I never really had watched it all the way through. It didn't make any sense. But yep. I was painting. I'm entering a piece into a Malibu art show this weekend.
Oh, good luck. Awesome. Nice.
And cool. So, thanks. I've been painting for the last couple of weeks and it was on and I watched and I was like, how did I ever not watch this from beginning to end? There's a lot of great classic moments in that movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I did a pilot with other actors. His name's Craig Bierko. He's fucking awesome. He and I were we played brothers on the show together, and Cloris was doing all the lines from Young Frankenstein and High Anxiety. He was my boyfriend! And she actually ended up mooning us one day, which was funny. To get mooned by Cloris Leachman.
I mean, put that one down on the bucket list, man.
Yeah.
That is a lifetime highlight right there.
Pretty cute.
That is awesome, man. That is so cool.
I was Blazing Saddles, man, when I was a kid. That was, the guys know that, like, when I was a kid, we had the old video disc player, you know, the video circles.
Of course.
Yeah. So we had Blazing Saddles, and there was only so many movies that we had. So the ones we did have got watched over and over, and Blazing Saddles was one of them.
But did you have to go, like, intermission?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, my stepdad decided that the old video disc was the real winner out of the VHS and Beta game, you know, so we went with the video disc player.
Hey, man. Yeah, everybody rolled the dice, didn't they? You know, you decided which one was going to be the big moneymaker.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you were high tech, though, man. I mean, if you had a laser disc player, you were the shit. Yeah. I mean, everybody was the talk of the town. We had one. And I'll never forget. I mean, still one of my favorite movies of all time. And we wore the shit out of that disc. It was Dragon Slayer. I used to watch Dragon Slayer nonstop on Laserdisc, and it was awesome. And had a lot of good times with that Laserdisc player. But I'd love to go back and get an old one now, and like just to have it, kind of nostalgia sake. Like I have a record player.
Who is in Dragon Slayer? I know I've seen it, but
I'm there. So the director was Matthew Robbins. Our stars are Peter McNichol, Caitlin Clark, Ralph Richardson,
Peter McNichol.
Yeah, every day with Dragon Slayer, my kids, you know, my kids are 8 and 9, and every time we go to get in our pool, we're in Phoenix, and the pool will be 100 degrees easy. And every time I go to get in, I always say "burning water," and I say it. Nobody gets what I'm talking about. Nobody gets my joke. I get it. I love it. But in that movie, in Dragon Slayer, the old blind guy with the little thing, and he's yelling at the guys as they're trying to cross the water that's about to catch on fire, and he's burning water. Nobody gets my joke. I do it all the time.
Your kids just think you're having a stroke. They're like,
dad's stroking out again.
It's happening again, man.
I do that with Albuca.
Right. Oh yeah, all the time. All the time. All the time.
So what do you guys think? Should we roll into the bit?
Eddie up for doing a little bit with us?
Yeah. Let's do a bit. I'm all about bits. You watched Warehouse 13.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
You're full of sense of humor, if nothing else.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we get pretty crass, But you'll see how it goes if we're going to do what I think we're going to do.
Okay, guys, let's give this a shot here. So in a world full of heroes, some get beat up, some get beat down. We're about to find out in a round of super beat-offs.
Some get beat off.
You got it. You got it.
Our first contender in this epic battle here, she's one of the cream of the crop. She's long mocked, but she's about to get her day in the sun. Her powers are intentionally ridiculous, but they actually do amount to being one of the most powerful out there. Doreen Green's squirrel powers allow her to chew through anything, leap to the sky, climb and use her claws in battle. She can also talk to squirrels, allowing them to form up, take down big baddies. Squirrel Girl's powers have allowed her to go toe-to-toe with some of the highest threats in the Marvel Universe. She's taken down the likes of Doctor Doom and Thanos. Heck, she's even gone face-to-face with somebody we might even hear about. And like Ant-Man, controls ants. She has the power to control squirrels.
No.
Yep. Yes.
Squirrel Girl.
That's a Marvel character?
That's yeah. a Marvel character.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. A real fucking Marvel character.
And actually one that's been in quite a few different types of comics, too.
Because I still have all my Marvel comics from when I was a kid.
Oh.
Nary a Squirrel Girl do I have.
She exists, I promise.
Yeah. Yeah, we excel on our podcast in finding the dumbest heroes that are actually have books printed. And that's probably 90% of what our podcast is riffing on dumbass superheroes that never should have been, for the most part.
Yeah.
Can she hold copious amounts of nuts in her mouth?
I'm assuming that she could. I'm assuming that she could.
She can. She can. Absolutely.
That is a superpower.
That's right.
Is she like Spider-Man? Is it the proportionate strength of a squirrel?
She's just fucking weak as hell.
But I don't know what that strength factor is. Like, I know squirrels are quick. They move fast, but sure on the strong part.
And flying squirrels.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Yeah. Speaking of flying squirrels, one thing about them, about her in particular that I found, she has a squirrel helicopter called the Squirrel-a-Gig, which makes no fucking sense whatsoever. I don't know where Squirrel-a-Gig came from, but she has a helicopter too, just like Thanos has a helicopter.
Of course she could build a helicopter. Squirrels are well noted for their aerospace engineering capabilities.
All right, so we're going to move into Squirrel Girl's opponent here in today's Super Beat-Off. This is Claws versus Claws. We're bringing in none other than Wolverine.
Ooh.
Most everybody knows him. 3 adamantium claws, healing power, indestructible skeleton. And in our scene, Wolverine just escaped from Alkali Lake. He's now in northern Michigan, sort of the homeland of Squirrel Girl, where she was a part of the Great Lakes Avengers.
Or the Michigan Militia, whichever you want to call them.
Wolverine's like running around through the woods and ended up finding some militia guys, and they're like, hey, boy, what the fuck you doing back here?
You look pretty good in them jeans.
You look pretty nice. Come over here. Well, you know what? You know, with Wolverine, did you guys know that every part of him can regrow, right? So there's been times where he's been taken down by like a nuclear bomb down to bare bones, which are adamantium. He's regrown from those bones that are coated in adamantium. So it literally shouldn't happen, but it has. But a little fact about Wolverine is that if a drop of his blood comes out of his body and lands on something, that blood, in the comics at least, can regrow his entire body. He has regrown from a drop of blood before. Now that's fucking lazy writing. I don't know what that is, but
that's weird.
I don't know who came up with that idea of like, yeah, well, even his blood can regrow, man. He's such a guy, a healing factor.
So if a nuke and he was turned into a Wolverine mist, he could theoretically come back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it was written.
Right. You know, the doctor just takes one vial of blood from you, and next thing you know, like, they come back to, like, do lab reports on it and shit, and there's another Wolverine sitting there, and they're like,
they're like, wait, what?
Hey, man.
How did you get in here? You were just out there.
Get the fuck out.
Man. Yeah, so that's kind of done. With Wolverine, you know, he can come back from his blood, but...
How does he regrow his hair? His hair just regrows, too, when he... It, like, knows exactly how to come back to that, that wild man dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfectly coiffed.
Yeah.
It's like Joe Dirt. It just automatically grows that hillbilly.
Yeah. You know. Yep.
Or the old G.I. Joe when you were a kid. Remember the original G.I. Joe? You
would
dunk him underwater and then pull him out, hair dry.
Yep. Yeah, they tried to say, and I saw this in my research for a good old Wolverine too, is they tried to say that his hair always regrows back to the way it was when his healing factor first kicked in. So when he first felt his healing, most mutants, like there's some kind of traumatizing event that basically kickstarts their mutant ability. Well, his hair will grow back to the point of when that mutant ability happened. So that's how they kind of try to play off how his fucking hair always comes back the right way and it's combed.
He's like he wants a new hairstyle, but he just like then he just
he can't do it.
He goes off and he gets in a fight with some guys with the flamethrower. They like blast him, and next thing you know, he's like, "Ah, fuck! It's right, goddamn! I just had it done yesterday, man."
Every time he goes to the barber, he just leaves and walks out the door, and the healing power kicks in, and boom, there he goes, got the old wind hairdo again.
Yeah. For a lot of money.
That's why he's always so pissed off.
Yeah. I mean, just go ahead and accept it at that point.
Yeah. He's just mad. He's really not mad at like getting powers or being experimented on. He's just been pissed for 100 years. He can't get rid of that stupid fucking haircut. And he's just like, I want to kill everybody. This stupid hair.
He was like, I was just trying to fucking joke with the lamb chops that day. And now I'm fucking stuck with them. God damn.
Yeah.
So at this point in the super beat off, they're just commiserating on their shitty powers.
Yeah, right. Pretty much. Maybe they don't fight. Maybe they just have sex and make little furry babies. I mean, because that would be a gnarly ass furry little animal if they had a baby, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, obviously, I think going into this, there's probably like 10-1 odds or greater that on Wolverine here. But can anyone make a case for Squirrel Girl at this point?
Oh, that's easy.
All right.
That's easy. Because, Squirrel Girl defeated Dr. Doom once.
What?
And this is how she did it. Yeah, I'm not even joking. So Dr. Doom, he's in his spaceship, his like hovercraft spaceship, the Doommobile, whatever the hell he calls it. And he's flying through and he's captured Squirrel Girl. He's got her, and he got her locked up and he's going to do all kind of sick, demented things to her. Well, the ship is flying too low. It's too close to the tree line because apparently he didn't think about this. And she summoned swarms and swarms of squirrels from the treetops that got into the ship, freed her, and they all piled up and ganged up on Dr. Doom and beat him into submission while she escaped. So he has been thwarted by Squirrel Girl, a couple times. So I'm assuming that's what's going to happen to Wolverine.
I have a question then. Okay, so when she summons squirrels, like when Ant-Man summons ants, they clearly do things way more intelligent than ants seem like they can normally do. So he either has immense power over controlling them or somehow he untaps an intelligence in them that they get. Is this true with the squirrels? Or did she just call squirrels and they just show up because they're like, hey, we just heard you calling? Or like,
hey, girl.
Right.
What's up, girl?
Right.
Heard Dr. Doom's got you locked up in a spaceship.
That sucks.
I thought you could chew through anything. Need some help? Yeah, I got a mouthful of nuts. I'm having a hard time chewing my way out of this thing.
I mean, the whole premise of Squirrel Girl just has me flummoxed.
Yeah, I got to go turn the air up a little bit. It's getting hot in here.
We got to introduce Eddie to a character that we always refer to on Because Nerd, and his name's Cocaine Jim. And anytime shit gets real crazy, we just say Cocaine Jim had to be in that writing room, right? Because who fucking comes up a Squirrel Girl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're sitting around a table. They're planning this out. They got a storyboard up and they're like, man, we got Dr. Doom. He's a badass. He's got a spaceship and fucking magnetic powers and telekinesis and stuff. And man, who are we going to get to fight this guy? We're out of ideas. And he just busts in.
He's like, hey, motherfuckers, I was walking through the park and I got a fucking idea for a character right now.
Yeah, man. Right.
I got an idea.
I don't trust those little fuckers.
All right. So I have to bring this up. I got to get this out there. Do you know why what they came up with for Wolverine as to how he can come back so many times? This is canon. This is it.
Okay.
When Wolverine dies, like when he is completely obliterated to nothing, before he can come back from that nothing, he has to fight the devil. And if he wins the fight, he gets to come back. And if he doesn't get to come back if he's completely obliterated. That was written into an actual canon of his story where he had to go down and fight Mephistopheles.
Yeah.
And if he dies, that's their deal. Is he was like, look, if I win this fight, bub, I go back up and I live. And if I lose, I'll stay down here in hell. So we're supposed to assume that every time you see Wolverine get his ass kicked and die, he's fighting the devil and then coming back. That could be pretty badass, or that's just stupid.
Eventually.
That was the whole Wolverine in Hell series, right?
That sounds like more cocaine gin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're like,
devil, man.
Right.
Hey, look, everyone, I was just listening to some Robert Johnson.
Right.
Yeah, Robert Johnson.
Yeah, he was and man, I was just thinking, like, what if Wolverine actually had to fight the devil? And yeah, man, that'd be badass, you know. Yeah.
And Ralph Macchio can be there.
Steve Vai shows up and he plays a fucking killer solo, man. So that's what happens. So Wolverine dies. He goes down and has a guitar battle with Ralph Macchio's man and Ralph Macchio's dude, Steve Vai and Legba. And then he fights and wins and comes back every time. And not only is he a good fighter, but now he's a super fucking blues shredder. Yeah, dude. You didn't know things about Wolverine.
We're on to a whole new series of Wolverine.
And what's it? We have to put in the guy with the fiddle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Charlie Daniels, man.
Charlie Daniels.
Charlie Daniels,
Charlie Daniels.
We'll throw some Charlie Daniels.
Oh, yeah.
And Jack Daniels. Man, so I fucking see it like, all right, so now we're at a scene like Squirrel Girl is like riding in on her helicopter with Charlie Daniels and a bunch of squirrels. And like, they're just fucking going to town. And then like, and Wolverine shows up with like Ralph Macchio and Steve Vai, and they're like fucking a power trio, you know, and it's like this super beat-off's turned into a jam out. Like it's about to be a guitar battle.
Now they're going on tour, Squirrel Girl and Wolverine and the Devil.
They all smoke Big Fatty and do like an hour jam session.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So I think that's a good ending to the superpower beat off. I think the best way it could end is that they join a band and they go on tour and they do lots of coke.
And have a circle jerk.
And they have a circle jerk. That's right.
There you go.
That's how every fight ends.
Isn't you're it? Great. No, you're great. No, you.
All right. That was not at all where I saw it going. I have to admit, did not see it going
exactly.
That way.
Exactly. Yeah. That's good.
Exactly. Worth it.
All right.
Dunzo.
Done. So what, how did you guys meet up, the three of you guys?
Oh, Lord. Well, it started Clint and I met in high school. So back when we were like 13 or 14. And he's moved around a good bit. So we just always kept contact. I mean, long before the internet even made it easy, we'd call each other, whatever, just staying up with each other. Clint and Mike, they met once Clint got to Phoenix. And now I've just kind of been introduced to Mike and we've all formed a good friendship out of this.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
And now, yeah. So that basically, yeah, and it's all been through music for the most part. I mean, in high school, I met Chris and a bunch of buddies because one, we were all into Dungeons and Dragons and we still are. We're still huge D&D nerds. And for some reason, the couple of us kind of stood out. We weren't like everybody else. And so we kind of met each other from that and it kind of went on from there. And then Mike, I met him by one day just going, hey, man, I heard you play bass. And he's like, yeah, I do. And we're like, let's jam. And then we jammed and now we're best friends. So
awesome.
That's how it all goes down. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me on, man. I really appreciate the interest.
Yeah.
And
it's been our pleasure.
We really appreciate you coming on, too. It's been totally fun, man. It's a good time.
Yeah, it's great.
Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
It's great talking to you.
Absolutely.
And be sure, you know, to come over and say, hey, if you guys come to another con and
perfect. It's a deal. It's a deal.
All right. Hey, thanks, you guys.
Absolutely, man. Hey, have a good day, bud.
Hey, man. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
Hey, great talking to you, Eddie. Later on, man.
Thanks, Chris.
Later.
All right. That went good.
Yeah, that was awesome, man.
Yeah.
Still want to hear more? Well, you're in luck, because there's plenty more where that came from. Check us out at becausenerd.com or search for us wherever you get your podcast. We'll catch you nerds next time.